Hi, everybody. Jose Palomino here with another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. And today's guest is Tony Rogers, owner and CEO of Creative Mechanisms. And what Creative Mechanisms does, and Tony will tell you more about it, but they focus on helping companies produce their consumer products more cost-effectively, more efficiently, and to create better outcomes for consumers in the marketplace and win. So listen closely as Tony joins us and we really explore the power of design in manufacturing, the power of design in bringing products to market. So listen as Tony joins us right now. Well, welcome, Tony, to Business Growth on Purpose.
Hi, Jose. Glad to be here.
Yeah, Tony, for the benefit of our listening audience and our viewing audience, to give us some context, just what do you do, Tony, and who do you do it for?
Hi. Okay. I am Tony Rogers. I'm the owner of Creative Mechanisms. We are an engineering company. We design, engineer, and prototype mechanical consumer product. So anything from robotic vacuums to sit-stand desks to medical devices, if it has a mechanism and used by a consumer, we're part of it.
So interesting. So consumer products usually to me always means, a greater volume, like something that has to be produced in large numbers. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, we tend to work with companies that are developing product on a continual basis who are, making products in the hundreds of thousands and, have several products out on the market at the time. So, larger companies, mid-sized to large companies who are making product on a continual basis.
Right. So it seems self-evident, right? Like design always matters no matter what you're making. But when you're making something that's like coming off a production run where you're doing thousands of thousands per week, getting that design right seems to be like pretty mission critical.
It is absolutely mission critical, and getting it done for this gets into one of our specialties, which is design for manufacturing, and engineering for manufacturing. Getting it at the lowest possible cost when you're making hundreds of thousands of pieces, a nickel matters. Getting the easiest assembly so that there's less steps on the assembly line. Less purchase parts. There's just a myriad of things involved in the design for manufacturing that we get involved into, really trying to make that whole manufacturing process as painless as possible and as low cost as possible for the manufacturer.
Wow. So that's what your firm, your specialization then is helping companies, because presumably these companies have like engineering staff, people who make things all the time. But they still come to you because there's something to this, you said design for manufacturability, for example.
Yeah, the design for manufacturing, I mean, there's an awful lot to it. So there's the minutiae you can get down into if you're injection molding a part, the ribs and the amount of ribs that are in there and the flow of the plastic through the part and the draft angles and a lot of technical issues that are involved in the final design for manufacturing. But we actually take it all the way up front. When we start almost every project with concepts. So a customer comes to us with a problem, we're going to give them 5 to 10 solutions to that problem, whether it's a mechanism they're describing or a problem with a mechanism that they've developed. So even in that early beginning stage, we are looking at what is the best way, the lowest cost, the best way to manufacture this, the easiest for assembly, the easiest for reliability, just taking into all the accounting for all the things that they're going to encounter along the way, quality, reliability, low parts count, lowest amount of raw materials. So we're thinking about that way up front, and then you work your way along in the development. You develop these concepts and perfect them. We're always looking to reduce parts. What can we do to eliminate parts as we're moving along in the development process? And, you know, then you get into that engineering, into that minutia, and you know, making sure that you don't have, you know, extra plastic that's not adding value, that's not supporting the product. Making sure that you don't have too many steps for the assembly, making sure it's an easy assembly, and that, you know, you're not crossing wires or doing something that's very difficult for somebody to do on an assembly line. So all those factors get considered in order to make the product at the lowest possible cost.
So what's fascinating about that, so when you think of design, right, generally, let's say somebody who's not a professional designer, I'm thinking of, SolidWorks diagram drawing or rendering, right, that says this is what this is going to look like. It's a lighter, it's a chair, it's a vacuum, like you said, whatever it is. And that seems okay. I can see there's a lot of skill in that. You can almost envision the exploded diagram showing all the parts that go into it. But everything you just described had a lot more to do with, yes, you get that part right, but it had a lot to do with all the other considerations about how do you make money making that thing? And what are the ways you could lose money or at least have waste or wasted effort, wasted materials, wasted labor, all that stuff, making the same part. So it's not just a diagram.
Oh, no. There's a lot that goes into the files that actually produce the parts, but yeah, I mean, eliminating waste, as you said, getting rid of anything that's not necessary along that process is key. The more you eliminate, the more money you save.
So I'm kind of curious. Are you at a point now, and you've done this now for more than a couple of years, right?
So like 35 years now. We've had a lot of experience. A lot of changes happened along the way. I mean, everything used to be done in the U.S. when we started. There was no offshoring, and the times have changed.
Times have changed.
So rolled with them.
So I'm just curious. Do you go into like a store, whether it's a Staples or anything, and see products and kind of like, you know, I'm thinking of the movie The Sixth Sense, you know, I see dead people. Do you see bad design? Is it like glaring to you? Go, how do they do this? How do they bring this to market?
It's more when you're trying to put something together that you just bought for your kids or something like that. But yeah, sure. You see design fails all the time. And I mean, it gets down to even just taking something out of the package. We've done studies on people to how to assemble things, and there's nothing more frustrating to open up a box and start with part A, and our part A is on the very bottom of the box, and you've got to unload this whole thing in order to get to it, and it's a lot of heavy pieces. So that's all part of it as well. That's more on the customer experience side, but that all goes to what we do and how we think, and we just, you know, we want to make that whole experience excellent, not only for the customer, but for the manufacturer as well. Like how can we make everything easier along the way? And yeah, anytime I buy a product, it's a nature of the beast, you're looking at it and trying to figure out how you would do things differently.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned like packaging, right? So one of the, obviously, again, from a layperson's point of view, but as a marketer, as somebody who's, in the space for a long time in businesses, the company that's often held as the exemplar of excellence in consumer packaging is Apple, right? Where to this day, people still have those white boxes from the original iPhones. They didn't want to get rid of them. They were like things of perfection. And a lot of people have copied it since, but at the time they were really groundbreaking in how thoughtful they were to make it an experience.
Yeah. I mean, and that, to me, that's just elegance. There's an elegance to everything that they do that everyone's trying to emulate.
Right. So everyone's trying to emulate, but it comes from a place too, where it has to be a priority. Like something you just said, taking part A out, but having to empty the box to get the part A. And I could easily see where somebody else said, no, we have to make it so that we can fit this many on a skid and this many in the container. And that was the priority, which is important.
It's part of the issue. You've got to do that too.
but you got to do it too, right?
You've got to balance it.
Right. So that's interesting. But you can't ignore that part of the experience if you want people to feel. I mean, I'm just thinking as a marketer, I want people to buy my vacuum cleaner and tell their friends about how great this whole experience, as opposed to when I finally got it to work and I finally found the attachments. That's not what you want going out there. And that's not on your product literature. That's, but that's is actually what is going out for your product if it's not done right.
Absolutely. And I mean, it goes back to what you said with Apple. I mean, you know, no one really asked for an elegant unboxing situation or solution or whatever. But I mean, they delivered something that was really meaningful and something that was unexpected. And I think, you know, if you've ever put together a knockdown kit from, you know, that came in from overseas and you're assembling this thing, to have a elegant, wonderful experience is something new and refreshing. And that's what, you know, that's what we try to add into every step along the process that we're doing. I mean, and we try to do that for the people on the assembly line, you know, to make this just as beautiful and easy to put together as possible. We're an expert in living hinges, and we do a lot of things. We did a lot of living hinge packaging, and we've been able to prototype living hinges by CNC machining them, so that we can get them to work just like they do in production. But one of the things we've been able to do with that is combine parts. We've taken products that people have come to us that had 15 pieces and took it down to 5, because we can use living hinges and mold one part of plastic that you can fold up and actually make springs with it and latches and everything.
So a living hinge, would that be like my ketchup bottle where it's like
exactly the lid of the ketchup bottle? Yep, it's all one piece of plastic. So okay. if you can actually mold one piece of plastic that takes the part of 5 or 6 other pieces of plastic and turns it into one piece, that's a huge cost reduction. It's a huge savings, huge increase in reliability. The assembly line, you know, instead of putting 5 pieces together, you're folding one piece of plastic. It can make a huge difference. And that's the kind of thing that we bring to the table.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about the world of manufacturing. Here we are in, at the time of this recording, like mid 2022, looks like the world's coming out of the pandemic, right? As a health, it's still an issue in some parts of the world. I realize. But by and large, we're moving to like a post-pandemic reality. And yet we're also part of that reality is still continued supply chain issues. Certainly anything that's based on petroleum products, and you're talking about things that I'm assuming are made of some form of plastic, petroleum, something like that often. Sure. So what are some of the things somebody listening to this saying, let's say as a product designer, product marketing manager, somebody like that who has to think about these things, what are some of the opportunities in design, given the context we're now in, where everything's tough to source, and if you can source it, it's very expensive. And if you can source it, even expensively, it's hard to get the labor to work on it. So it's a lot. I mean, that's a trifecta of pain.
There is a lot of pain out there. And then I talk to a lot of business owners, and I don't know any that aren't talking about how hard it is to get employees and how terrible the supply chain has become. We've actually started using the phrase design for supply chain management, taking into consideration all the problems you have with your supply chain, whether it's, we're having trouble getting this type of plastic or, this type of part, how can we replace it? What are all the issues with the supply chain? And let's see if we can alter the design without altering tooling and everything else, what can we do? How can we address this problem? And it's like I said, almost everything that we start with is a problem. We customer presents a problem to us and we go in and we concept 5 to 10 ways that we can solve that problem for them. It's the same thing with the supply chain management. How can we, how can we help giving all the problems that you're facing with it? List out the problems and let us see what we can do to help out. Changing the design in order to adapt to the current environment.
But what I love about that, Tony, is I mean, the word in all of that is design, right? So we talk like our, you know, this show's name is Business Growth on Purpose, right? And what our firm does is we try to help people think about growth as something you can do intentionally by design. It's not something that right. just happens, you know, right. fortuitous.
It takes effort.
Right. It takes a lot of thought about how you do it, positioning, all those things. So design is such a critical thought. But what you're really helping us see, there's layers to that design. It's not just, I have an idea for a new stapler that's easier to use. Okay. But getting it into mass production where you can sell 500,000 units a year is a whole different thing. And yep. that's all the detail. And then taking into account, okay, we're not going to build this in a vacuum. We build it in the world today, right? The earth today as it exists, supply chains such as they are, materials such yep. as they are, labor such as it is. So what happens when... So in that world, just to finish the thought, so designing sounds like a really rigorous and challenging endeavor when you can start with a clean sheet of paper, okay? But what happens, as I'm sure, I can't imagine 35 years, this doesn't happen a lot, where it's not a clean sheet of paper, where you're walking into a situation where somebody has a kind of a messy situation. They've already invested like, you know, $1 million in R&D. They've done the tooling. You kind of inferred that before. You know, is there hope for somebody in that situation that is now the circumstances on the ground have changed, and what you know was a unit target price of, let's say, you know, $50 a unit now has become $80 a unit. What do you do? So how do you? Yep. I'm just curious. How do you interface with somebody who has already deep investments and they kind of like, I want to change as little as possible?
If there's hope, we're going to try to find it. That's a messy situation. And honestly, a lot of engineering companies won't get involved. If we can't start with a clean sheet of paper, we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to pick up somebody else's problems. We don't feel that way. We're really look at things from the business perspective. You've got a product that you've invested. You have sunk costs in. You've invested time and money and effort, and now there's a problem. Okay, we may not have helped from the start, but if you want us to help you now and pick up where you are and try to save those sunk costs and try to solve the problems that you're facing, we're willing to do that. And you know, there usually is something salvageable. You're usually going to be able to find some, you know, find a way with some creativity, and you've got to balance that. You've got to look at, okay, it would be so much better if we could start over and do this and make a new tool, but you know, financially, that's just not an option. I mean, that, you know, that costs X amount of dollars, and that's crazy. You know. This is the next best solution, and we can get there in a reasonable amount of time and effort. So, you know, we're balancing our costs with, you know, with what, you know, what the steps should be. So yeah, we could get to a great solution that wouldn't cost any more, but it's going to, you know, take us 4 weeks, and that's not reasonable in time or money. So, you know, you've got to balance all of these things, and you've got to look at it like I would look at it from a business problem. Like, you know, with my company, I want to get the most for my dollar. Sure. And you know, how can we help our client get the most for their dollar, considering their sunk costs, considering, you know, the supply chain, current issues, you know, everything, you know, lay out all the problems, and we're going to do our best to give you the best solution in terms of time, money, and sunk costs.
So that makes a whole lot of sense to me. But in the back of my head, I'm also, there's like voice, there's a little voice, and I don't normally hear a lot of voices in the back of my head. But the one that comes up is, which is what has often undermined many change activities of all kinds in many organizations. And that's culture. The fact is, there are people, whoever, like when you come into a project, whether it's the beginning, the middle, end, doesn't matter, other humans were involved in that state of affairs. And now I'm just curious. You're coming in to say, hey, you know, we're Ghostbusters. We're coming in, you know, to zap those, the demonic creatures. But there's people say, wait a second, that's my work. And that's stuff we did. So I'm just kind of curious how, and this would be true whether they brought you in as a third party expert firm, which you are, or if they just hired a new, you know, hotshot engineer to be part of the staff. I mean, it's the same dynamic. It's somebody's coming in to change what was going on. That is always a shift, whether it's engineering or HR, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious how, through the years, how you've managed through that and navigate that.
It's a sticky situation, obviously, you know, I mean, but in that situation, you're coming to us because there's a problem. So if we're going to help you, we just have to communicate it. We're here to help you solve that problem. We're here to not undo anybody's work or anything. We are really trying to save everything that's been done and provide the best solution possible. So, you know, yes, there are always some people who, not invented here, don't want anything to do with it. You know, in this business, like doing it 35 years, you meet every type of personality in the engineering world. Sure. But you know, for the most part, when you're there to help and you're talking about, you know, look, we're not trying to change everything. We're trying to take what you have and help you move it forward, you know, for the least amount of money, the least amount of time, and make the best product possible. Most engineers can understand that. And you know, after the first bruise, can move on and then participate.
Right. Okay. That's good. I like that expression too. And it makes sense. I mean, you know, at some level, it's almost like, dude, we're not here to take your job. We're here to help. In fact, we may be what helps you keep it. You know, you don't have to say that, but it's kind of there.
And they need to see that at first. You know, right. People need to see that a little bit. You don't know who this is coming in, and you know that can be very threatening. Right. But we've got the greatest group of guys. They're just real easy to work with. No one, egos get checked at the door here every day. There's not, you know, we have a great concepting process that we go through that we've kind of developed over the years, and you know, we just don't go lock ourselves up into a conference room for an hour and come out with ideas. These guys work on them like 10 minutes at a time, 15 minutes. They sit in a circle and they spin around and they, you know, hey, I got an idea, and they throw it out and they talk about it for 5 minutes. Then they go back to their job and their work, and they, you know, somebody else says, no, you can't do it that way. You got to look at this, and that goes on for a long period of time, depending on the project, and it's that kind of just back and forth and no egos, no animosity, no bad ideas, just unfunded ones. You know, you gotta be accepting and have a great culture in our place in order to present that to the client.
Well, kind of conjures up an image in my mind of the great movie Apollo 13. Where Ed Harris puts all the materials that's up on Apollo 13 on the table and says, we have to make an oxygen scrubber out of this.
Yeah.
Or something like that to save.
Yeah,
figure it out.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, and you know, then you're in life or death situation there. You know, you better put your egos aside and figure out the best way possible. Yeah. You know, that's a no brainer there. But, wow. You know, we feel the same way. The solution has to matter. You know, everyone's always looking for the best solution. And it is pretty surprising in our place how agreement just comes. Like I can't even think of when, you know, there was a battle over a couple of concepts. I mean, and there may be, we discuss them with a client, there may be, you know, hey, we're pretty equal in these three. You know, there's not like, you know, we need your way in here because this team sees these two or three concepts as all having equal merit. They all have their problems. They all have their advantages. You know, you can't, you know, there's no, nothing's perfect in this. But then, you know, then the client weighs in and almost always the right concept presents itself.
That's great. And what's interesting about that too, is you just hit on a very real thought, which is true of any kind of process improvement, any kind of process design, which is, if you wait for perfect, you'll be waiting a long time. So yeah. It often is about the right trade-offs, the trade-offs that you can live with. And, you know, again, people coming to you, I'm assuming they're planning to launch a product that's going to sell, you know, 500,000 units. It's a lot of money involved getting it over the line in a way that they can make a profit with each of those units.
Yeah. And we have had many clients that just can't stop developing, can't stop trying to make it, you know, that much better, or, you know, make this change at the last minute. And, you know, and the battle cry is always, is that going to sell one more unit? You know, let's be real. There is a time to draw the line. And some people have a real hard time with it. You know, they like the process and they want perfection. And there is a time where it's not going to sell you one more piece. So why are you spending money to do it?
Well, we've mentioned Apple, Microsoft. These are companies that have become obviously among the most valuable companies in the world, who made really captured the idea of launching a product that didn't have everything, but had enough to move the units and get people into their environment, buying into their story. Yeah. And waiting 6 months or a year wasn't going to sell them one more unit.
Yep. Yep. But, you know, 6 months later or a year later, they're coming out with the next generation. Right. And guess who's upgrading? Huh?
Right.
Right. I'm always guilty of that. Like, I love all the new bells and whistles. So, you know, as long as it's not a faulty product. I mean, as long as what the changes aren't correcting something that, you know, that's going to leave a bad taste in the customer's mouth. You really have to look at that. You know, why are we making this change? Is it going to sell? Is it going to make the product better enough to sell more pieces, or are we just spending money? Because we know that it's an improvement that should happen, but it could happen on the next round.
Gotcha. So, making those kind of decisions. Tony, first of all, we keep talking about this. This is fun stuff. Making the future happen, right? The one product at a time. I love it. If somebody listening, Tony, to this wanted to know more about your firm, what you do, and how to contact you, where should they go?
Our website is creativemechanisms.com. Hit the contact us. There's a link to my calendar, info@creativemechanisms. We're going to get, email comes to me and my guys will get back to you. So you've got multiple ways you can get in touch with us. And it's a great website.
Okay, fantastic. Tony Rogers, thank you so much for joining us today on Business Growth on Purpose. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jose. It was great talking to you. Take care.
Take care. Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.